Oh, it begins another space. Here we go. Okay, so I'm going to now very awkwardly try to give everyone speaker rights. Yepe, Ash, and Break F1, if you can request speaker access. Okay, I just got booted off my own space. That's a very good start. Right, Yepe, I think you should have speaker rights.
Hello.
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 It's good to hear your voice. It's been a very long time since we've done one of these.
It's been an entire season,
It
technically.
has. It has. Oh, it's been an entire off season, we should say.
Does that mean our season is over?
I don't know. It's a bit of a weird time, isn't it? Where it's that weird moment where the season hasn't started yet, but I'm spending most of my time reading up on F1 or checking out the latest news or.
I think
Oh.
Engine Mode 11 had a pretty brilliant flow chart of where we are in the season. We're at the point where we start making wild guesses based off of car renders.
Okay. I want to bring this up later on, but one thing I absolutely cannot wait for, and the tech heads that have already joined will know this, is when you get the first glimpse of a Red Bull, a Ferrari, or a Mercedes on track, and usually really bad footage that's been filmed at Silverstone by someone that's never really held a camera before. And we're freezing it. We're taking screenshots of really bad clips, and it's really blurry. And I remember doing that last year for about half an hour to see what Red Bull were hiding, and it was like, oh, this fancy side pod. I love it. We're just waiting
How
for.
soon can I start my Ferrari support group for next year is our year, the usual.
Well, the good thing
How
is,
many
so
races?
last year I created a this is our next year is our year Ferrari group, and I just use that one every year, so.
That feels like cheating, but I think I can see Bryson this year. So when we get to the tech talk, I want him to chime in on the aero because he knows about this stuff.
Sure thing. Okay, I think all of our. Oh, we're having some tech issues with Blake. I did give him speaker
No,
rights, and
I'm
he's become
here.
a humble. Yes, he's here. Fantastic. Right, that is everyone. Wait, so should I refer to you as Drake F1 or Blake? You tell me.
Blake is fine. Blake is fine.
Right. Love it. Lovely. Oh, it's good to hear your voice. It's been a long time since you've done one of these.
Listen to that
It has
crisp
been. It has
Texan
been.
accent. Howdy, y'all.
Yeah, you
How
can
y'all
tell
doing?
he's got like proper headphones and equipment. Oh, these content creators, they've got actual technology. God damn. Right, okay, let's get going. So, thank you everyone for joining our space. The way we're going to do this is we're going to treat it as a bit of a. We almost want it to feel like a bit of a magazine show. We've got an expert panel that I'll introduce one by one. We've got an agenda that we're going to go through. So, we're not going to have people kind of talking over each other or getting sidetracked. We've got an agenda. We're going to go through it. We're going to talk about livery season, what we think of the quote unquote launches we've seen so far. We're going to talk about Ford. It's a pretty big deal. Possibly a bit of Andretti, GM. And we're also going to talk about all the drama that's been kicking off within the FIA, kind of the politics of the sport as well. If at any point you would like to jump in and ask our panel a question, please raise your hand and I'll bring you in with speaker rights. If you can just keep your question or your point like quite short and succinct so we can keep the conversation flowing around it. Once you've got involved, I might temporarily remove your speaker rights, but that does not mean at all that you can't jump back in later on. It's just so we can keep the conversation going and get through our agenda. I've told our guests we will be no more than kind of around 60, 70 minutes. I know what that will inevitably mean is that we will overrun. This always happens. So, we'll see how we go. The other thing I would mention, once you're invited in, just please be polite, no bad language, things like that. And be nice to our guests. So I'm going to introduce them one by one. I want to start off with, I think I was going to say my favorite content creator, but I realized Blake's on here, so I can't say that. I'm going to break his heart. But it's Ash. Ash, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm very good. I'm so excited for this Formula One season to start. You know that I'm buzzing. But I believe you've actually been a little bit busy already because you were recently at Daytona.
Yes, Daytona 24, and people do actually sleep in the grandstands. It is not a rumor.
Okay, yeah, I've always wondered about those 24-hour races, but I suppose after a few beers and after a few drinks, the sun starts to set. It's, bring a pillow. I guess it works quite well. So just for those who are joining, who've perhaps not seen you on social media before, tell us what you're about and where can people find you?
Sure. So my online persona name is Ash Vandelay. Nice to meet everyone. I cover primarily was first Formula One, but then I kind of dived into the world of NASCAR, IndyCar. So if you're ever on Twitch and want to do some and want to watch with a few people during the race, during those three specific sport races, I do watch alongs on Twitch. But then I'll also do educational and kind of fun content on Instagram and TikTok. And I also am a big proponent, obviously, of women in motorsports. So I hold a lot of interviews when I go to races with women racers, women who are behind the scenes, whether it's PR, pit crew, etc. So if that's something you're into, would love to have you.
Great stuff. Okay. Right. Let's go to our second guest. I'm going to introduce, it's Mr. Former Red Bull himself. He's now a content creator. Blake, how are you?
I'm doing spectacularly. I'm glad to be on the space with all of you. It's nice to be back.
Oh, absolutely. It's been a long time since we've done this. So actually, if you're listening in, you might recall over on the Formula One subreddit, we used to hold talks. And actually, Blake, you were one of the experts we had last year. In fact, I think you were probably the most expert person we ever had.
You throw that title around expert pretty loosely, don't you?
I do. I suppose the other person was Engine Mode 11. So I guess next to him, you obviously just look like the genius anyway. But do you want to give a quick shout out to your channels and just explain, you know, where people can find you and what type of content you're producing?
Yeah, so I do most of my stuff is on Break F1 on YouTube, which is a little bit more. The way I look at it is making the technical side of Formula One fun and easy to understand. So it's not. It's very much trying to avoid alienating people. It's like come talk about this interesting stuff, because there's not a whole lot of people talking about that side of the sport that have been inside of it. So that's what I try to do on that channel. And then I do some watch along content on Twitch. So racing qualifying. I only cover Formula One. I don't have the capacity, or you're crazy, Ash, for all the sports content you do. And I actually absolutely love your watch along streams. But yeah, she's all over everything motorsport. And that's pretty much what I'm doing. I do short form on all the other platforms like TikTok and Reels and stuff. But most of my stuff is either me completely taking the piss or actually digging into some quite technical stuff that fans usually don't really get to hear or talk about it unless it's somebody from inside the sport. So that's me.
Great stuff. Quick question then. How often do people leave comments on your content and tell you you're wrong or you don't know what you're talking about?
Yes. how much time do you got? It's one of those things, and it's one of those things where you don't want to just tell people. You don't want to be like, this is what I used to do all the time. But it's at the same time, it's like, trust me, I do know what I'm talking about. And this was my job for 10 years to work on these topics. This is my second language kind of thing. So it's okay. I think that's the normal thing. I'm sure Ash has plenty of instances of people telling her that, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. You're like, no, you will find that I know exactly what I'm talking about, because unlike resting in my armchair and just being a menace on the internet, we're out here doing research into stuff that we don't know about to try and help spread interesting conversations and awareness and knowledge about topics that we're passionate about.
Oh, and Ash, jump in.
Sorry, an anecdote about that. I made a video. I remember this because I talked to Blake about this when it happened. We had a good laugh. I made a video about some like F1 terminology, like something quick for TikTok, because people digest it very well. And then if they're interested, they keep asking questions. And I found short form is actually a really good way to go and attract new fans and attract those fans who may not know as much, but they want to dive deeper. And anyway, I made a quick thing and someone's like, you're wrong. That's not what box it means or comes from. And I was like, he just like kept yelling, like all caps in the TikTok comments. So I just simply copy and pasted f1.com/definitions for race fans and just send them the link. And I was like, you go argue with that Formula 11, buddy. I'll see you later. Like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
Oh, that must be immensely frustrating. But there won't be any of that today, because we're all going to be very well behaved.
Whoa. There will be
Yepa's here.
Of that.
Yepa's here.
I am not.
I was thinking before I introduced Yepa, I was thinking about like removing your speaker rights. I was like, it's all civilized. So nice and civilized. Yepa, why don't you introduce yourself to everyone?
Well, so the person that Ash and Brake just talked about, the one person going around Twitter disagreeing with everyone who knows anything, is me. I disagree with people. That's my job. That's what I do. I don't create content. I ruin content. That's what I'm here for.
Okay, so that's Yeppe, content ruiner. Okay, that's our panel. I'm going to just move on to we've got a very busy agenda. Once again, for anyone joining, if you want to join in at any point, please raise your hand. I may not be able to give you speaker rights immediately, but I will put you in the queue and I will call you in when the time is right. And as I said before, I might remove speaker rights, but that doesn't mean you can jump back in. Right, let's talk about launch season. Ash, in my notes, I put launch in like inverted commas. That was very deliberate because these aren't real car launches. In effect, they kind of, it's teams showing off deliveries. For the most part, a lot of teams aren't really showing too much. We saw a pretty bare bones Red Bull presentation. Conversely, Alfa Romeo actually showed us a lot more. So what do you make about the approach we've seen so far? And is there any one of the ones we've seen that you've preferred?
Sure. I think I appreciated so far, no offense to Red Bull fans. I'll get to my point that I'm making. Like, just Red Bull was so dragged out and everyone was like, just show us the car and talk around talk while the car's in the background, but we just want to see the car. And they took forever. They built it up and I understand why they did. I understand the hype and holding the tension of the room, but I was like, everyone else just showed the car and they talked about it or they talked around it or they talked near it, which I appreciated because that's all we care about. I found it interesting. I feel like this year people may not be as excited as last year. And I know because of the rule changes from last year, we were excited to see what teams could have done differently. And now everyone's kind of just looks the same or close to the same. You're like, okay, mechanics wise. But I do like Alfa Romeo's. I think that's my favorite so far. I like the exposed carbon fiber. I like the red and black, very like Darth Vader. Like, I don't know, it's just a little unique vibes because I think we're so used to seeing bright colors or just all white. But so far, Alfa Romeo has been my favorite. And it felt kind of like a talk show, like a Top Gear kind of show from watching their presentations, right? Red Bull was doing some New York City, which I was surprised about. They didn't pick Vegas or Miami. Maybe someone has some insight there about why they specifically picked New York City, maybe because of Red Bull marketing and everything behind that. But motorsports-wise, I was surprised they didn't pick any of the U.S. races, maybe even Austin, to do their content in. But yeah, Alfa Romeo, my favorite by far.
I'm really glad you mentioned the black on the cars. We will come back to that later on because we have actually had a question that's been sent in. So we will bring that up. But no, all very good points. Yeppe, I want to specifically focus on Red Bull for a second. It was a really long event. So I actually... Great. I'm part of the problem, right? Because I was at work when this happened and I still put the stream on. I was in a really busy meeting. You know, I was like, right, I want to see this car. Let's see if it looks any different. I wasn't expecting to see the new car. I was hoping to see something and the livery was exactly the same as it always was. You know, I guess some of it is down to they are just entitled to do a PR event. You know, they don't have to show anything. But I think what I didn't like, and I think this is what some of the discourse was saying, is the fact that they kept referring to it as the RB19. I don't know. What did you make of the event?
I mean, first of all, I say that it was probably the perfect stream for people who were at work because you could put it on and you could go answer like 17 emails and then 30 minutes later look back and they would still be in the same, you know, place in the presentation of the car. It was so boring, wasn't it? Like, was it just me? I mean, it was just so boring.
I think
that's all I can say about it, right? I mean, I'm kind of disappointed because I was expecting so much more from a company that, like, they kind of make their living on, you know, extreme sports marketing, right? Making cool videos and, you know, lots of energy and action. It just was just like, meh.
Yeah, it's a strange one. Red Bull is a marketing campaign. You know, that's what Red Bull is. They are one of the best companies in the world at doing it. And it's almost like that didn't translate to the Formula One team. I didn't get it at all.
The livery, I mean, come on. No one was expecting them to make a major departure from the same livery they've been running for years. So nothing new there. And I don't think anyone was expecting them to show up, to show up with a brand new RB19. This is what we're going to run for the very first race. I mean, no one's going to show up with that car. We all know that. But I was just expecting so much more from that event. It didn't feel like it was completely, you know, baked through, like the bread wasn't ready to come out of the oven, so to speak.
Yeah, building on the event, as someone who's also additional full-time job is doing corporate communication and events, I feel like if I held that event, my boss would be like, you're so close to being fired. it seems like they didn't give the host enough time to rehearse what was on the teleprompter, because you can tell the hosts were just really reading very, like, it's like they saw the script for the first time. I mean, Stefano didn't, like, why didn't they take that out on the teleprompter when he said that he changed his mind on not coming up on the stage? Like, how was that not discussed first? It seemed like a lot of things were either last minute or just weren't handed off correctly, communications-wise, maybe depending who was relaying the information to whom. It was a little clunky. It was just long, I think. And I think, to Yepi's exact point, we just wanted to build a little bit more hype. We didn't really care about the tension at that point anymore. We've been in the off season for so long. Just show the car and get to the point and let's go.
Right, yeah. I do just want to... So I've just given Bryson speaker access. Before you jump in, Bryson, Blake, can I just ask you then just about the livery of Red Bull? Because I've seen a lot of people kind of question, you know, it's the same one again. But actually, I think we've reached a point where that livery is classic. And I think it's one of those things where I think in 20 years' time, people will remember that livery, even though it's broadly the same every year. But it is a classic livery. Like, it doesn't need to change, does it?
Well, here's the point. So I was fortunate to get invited with a handful of other creators to the Williams launch. And never mind, we'll get back to the launch. But while we were there at their facility, we got to tour their museum. And you look through the museum and you can clearly see, I mean, recently there's been a bit of departure from that, but you can see in the lineage of their cars, there are 10-year chunks where the liveries are virtually unchanged. And those cars are iconic. Look at Ferrari. Look at McLaren's, you know, the Marlboro and McLaren. Like, these things are icons. And that's don't expect a company who Red Bull is the team. It's not a sponsor. It is the team. So the fact that represents, you know, that is the Red Bull Racing identity is that there's nothing that's changed in the background for that to change. So I get it. I completely understand. We love these one-off liveries. We love the Camel Bull. We love the commemorative Japan car. But this is a brand, and this is going to be, or already is, an iconic livery. And there's not really a whole lot of reason to change it. Do we want to see something different? Of course we do. We love the Camel Bull. We love that Japan livery. But yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say that one-off livery they did, which they never got to race at Suzuka, so I think they used it at Turkey instead. It's absolutely extraordinary. Yeppe, I know you've got your hand up, but I want to go to Bryson because he's made the effort to join, giving him speaker rights. Bryson, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Am I audible?
Yes, you are, loud and clear. What did you make of the car launches? And then I've actually got a question for you. Someone sent us in a tech question, and as soon as I saw that you joined, I was like, right, I'm getting Bryson on. So, yeah, first of all, what did you make of the car launches very quickly?
So I agree in broad strokes with everything that was already said here, but I think the first thing I want to say is that this question of car launches is a complex and nuanced conversation. I think there are subtleties to it that we're not kind of spending enough time on. First of all, let me say it's totally understandable and fine for teams to just have livery launches. You know, they don't want to necessarily show their cars, even though Jeppy said that no one will show their actual car. We know some teams will show their actual cars because they have shakedown tests the same day, and they've explicitly said they're going to show their real car, like Aston Martin has. But I think one of the reasons that we're semi-frustrated is not so much that we're being shown either a previous generation car or show car, it's that we're being shown that and then being asked to pretend that we're not being shown what we're being shown.
Right. Agreed. I think
probably the most egregious version of this was Red Bull claiming that their RB18 was in fact the RB19, and worse still is asking Checo and Max to play along with it, and they're trying their best to keep up the ruse, but it's getting to the point now where people are starting to have kind of a reaction to it. And I think we're talking about the Alfa Romeo launch. They almost got this perfectly right. I want to give them credit because they did such a great job. Their render was probably the closest thing to a 2023 car that we've seen yet, right? But it is just a render. And in the 2 seconds where they had an actual, you know, physical car that they had Valtteri and Guanyu Zhou take the wrap off of, it looked like a very interesting car, but we know for a fact that that was a show car, right? And the only reason why I was slightly disappointed was because there was some indication that we might see a physical car, a 2023 car in person. And that's just not what we ended up getting at the Alfa Romeo launch. It's not a problem overall. I just don't like being told that I'm looking at something that I'm not. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, no, agreed. And I think it comes back down to, as I was saying earlier, it's just like, it's respecting your audience, right? It's like, I remember last year, Red Bull said they showed off the RB18, but it was the FIA show car with a Red Bull livery. And it's like, yeah. No one would mind if you just called it what it is. I did notice actually the Williams launch, they nearly got it right because they did not refer to it as the new car anywhere. They kept saying it was a livery launch. But then on the website, someone had put in like a subheader saying, introducing the brand new car, and the FW, whatever it was. But yeah, no, I completely agree with everything you've said. We do actually have a technical question for you. It's actually semi-related to deliveries. It's from Rory. So Rory has asked, do we think most of the grid will have exposed carbon integrated into their liveries for weight savings and switch to mattes instead of glossy paints? So far, I believe it's Haas, Williams and Alpha, and to a degree Red Bull have carbon exposed and others hinting at it. I've got to just say, I thought the Alpha looked incredible. I actually thought it was the Ferrari. I thought it leaked.
I really enjoyed it.
See more of that. Are you expecting more of that?
Yeah, I am expecting to see more of it. In fact, I think I actually had a tweet from a while back that kind of predicted this. But again, this is what I would say. This is a second iteration of what we were seeing last year, right? We know that teams were struggling to get down to the 798 kilogram weight limit. And people don't realize that, yes, you know, you do save, you know, several hundreds of grams through the weight of the livery, but more importantly than the actual amount of mass is how high off the center of the gravity it is, right? Because in terms of vehicle dynamics and weight transfer and these types of things, what matters isn't just how much mass it is, but where it is in three-dimensional space. And so the higher off the ground it is, the more of an impact it has, if that makes sense. So if you remove large chunks of the livery, you can save, you know, a few hundred grams in an important area. And what I think teams are doing is, instead of assuming that they'll be able to not have to do that, you know, and then taking away the paint and having it look very odd, what they're doing is starting off in their version of deliveries right now with a lot of exposed black, so that they can run that situation with, you know, exposed carbon during race weekends if they want to, without having to radically change the livery. Now, just to be clear, Mercedes in particular has dropped a lot of very suggestive hints in recent days that they'll be black in their livery. So much so that people will be upset if there isn't. I definitely expect to see a significant amount of black in the liveries going forward, but I think that's kind of like a temporary thing. I know some people don't like exposed carbon as a color, and as teams get better at building their chassis and get the weight down, I think extreme measures like this will be less necessary.
Yeah, I just want to say I absolutely love when Bryson shows up, not only because he just spits truth left and right, first about the launches and the cars, and now about all the technical stuff about the exposed carbon and all the stuff. I just love it. And second, because Bryson, we need to get you to record some audiobooks or something. That voice is amazing.
Well, I mean, if you want to hear more of me, you can listen to the Tech Heads F1 podcast where we're talking about this stuff. I'm not gonna plug it, but I'll put a link in the chat to the latest episode. It was pretty great. We had Jai Campbell Brennan on. But yeah, I always love talking about F1, and I'm happy to do more of it.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to go back and just extend a little bit of an olive branch for Red Bull, because what most of us were expecting for this launch event was obviously the whole Ford thing. And that was ruined about like what, an hour before the actual launch began, when Ford announced, hey, we're coming back, and F1 announced, hey, Ford is coming back. So that one big thing that we were all expecting and looking forward to, that was just hyping up this event, just disappeared like that. And then, you know, that kind of puts the entire event on a back foot. So I feel like even if it had been a slightly boring event, if we had that one big reveal at the end to look forward to, it could have really turned it around. But, you know, I don't get the strategy behind revealing that Ford partnership before the actual reveal started.
Yeah, I do agree. That was a bit odd, actually. Rory, I can see you requested access. I will try and bring you in just once we've got through a few more points. Ash, we're going to go quickly to you. And then Blake, I want to ask you about Ford and GM and engines and all these things. Go on, Ash.
Here's our new Honda car. By the way, Ford. Just like, this is awkward for everyone in the room. Like your ex and your new girlfriend. I thought it was so, I don't know, for the Americans in the space, like a Ford December to Remember event. It was very advertising and just very pushy and just very Ford this, Ford that, and then them driving the Ford EV car and things like that. Like, I understood, but I wish they just kind of melded better into the event itself as opposed to being like a separate Ford section. I don't know how to explain it a little bit better. I wish Ford was made more of a part, I guess, with Honda thing. See, here's the, now it's just confusing, right? Because you have the Honda car, but you have the new Ford. The separate section, it was just a little awkward for me. Again, a little clunky. I think it's the best way I can describe it. But Ford being in the United States, I think as big as they are, I lived in Florida for a couple of years, and I unfortunately drove a Prius in front of a lot of Ford 250s raised and been blinded by their headlights. So I'm excited to see what Ford can bring to the table. Hopefully good things, just so people can stop shitting on America. Because as soon as Ford fucks up, I just know that we're going to get some comments about it. It'd be very interesting to see what they can do, but the launch was a little awkward to me.
As soon as the news about Ford broke and they started releasing their PR statements, I actually got really sad because I knew it meant we weren't going to see like a special Honda-style livery for this year or, you know, a big Honda logo on the rear wing. Blake, right, let's talk about Ford then. So we know, and you'll remember from your time in F1, that, you know, Red Bull Racing don't want to be dependent on another power unit manufacturer. You know, they spent years being very competitive during an engine freeze period with a slightly underpowered Renault, which had some benefits elsewhere. And then during the hybrid era, the Renault investment just wasn't there on the power unit side. They decided to really just control their own destiny for 2026. And now they've got Ford involved in some capacity, you know, whether that's going to be just funding, whether that's going to involve some kind of technical link up and getting some Ford employees down to, you know, good old Milton Keynes. How much of a statement is it for Red Bull to get Ford on board, especially when you consider it seems as though it was in Red Bull's hands. Well, it was their decision not to go with Porsche.
Yeah, it sounded like the touch on the Porsche thing, that Porsche wanted a big stake and Red Bull weren't willing to give that up. And here you have another American OEM, which has plenty of other benefits to the sport from a marketing point of view, but it's not really clear yet what that partnership is, because Red Bull's been heavily investing in Red Bull powertrains. This is, you know, this is a whole new giant facility on site with assuming an entire engine development facility. So what's the point of that? And it looks like this has all been kind of like, this is kind of a new thing. Honestly, it's not, I don't know how old or mature this deal is, but something's there. And it sounds like, I don't even know. I don't think anybody knows at this point, like where's the technology flow, and is it just a money flow thing? So is Ford will, obviously, a lot, very heavily into electric vehicles now. So is this, you know, will Ford be the person that's developing the high voltage and electrical systems on the car, and then Red Bull powertrains actually taking what they've learned from licensing the Honda IP and then building their own combustion engines and all the ancillaries to go with it? So it's super interesting. I am very excited to see Ford back in the sport, but at the same time, I agree 100% with Ash that if it doesn't go well, there will be quite a bit of flack and a grief for Americans, effectively. We're trying.
That's actually it's a really good point, actually, because hypothetically, let's just be completely honest, Red Bull powertrains have never developed an engine. I remember, I think Christian Horner did an interview in mid-2022, and he said they had a single-cylinder kind of test bench set up. And they're trying to compete against Mercedes, Ferrari, you know, the very factory for Alpine, which I think will be called an Alpine power unit for 2026, so not Renault. You know, these are sort of companies that have huge infrastructure, you know, incredible amounts of experience in producing engines. if Red Bull start off slightly behind, people aren't going to say, oh, you know, people aren't going to necessarily say, oh, that factory in Milton Keynes, that Red Bull powertrains factory with some Ford input has produced an underpowered power unit. They're going to say that Ford is slow. It is a risk, really.
Yeah, it is a risk for them. But I think at the same time, Red Bull have also attracted a lot of staff from other places, other manufacturers. They've taken lots of people from Brixworth, the Mercedes engines plant. They've attracted a lot of talent, and they're throwing a lot of cash at it, facilities. So, yes, you can always make excuses, but I think they're doing their best to not have any excuses. So we'll wait and see.
I mean, you're touching on something that's very I love the politics and finances of F1, and this is something I've been trying to figure out how this deal is going to work, because when they announced the partnership with Red Bull, they called it a strategic partnership, if I'm not misremembering. And that doesn't smell to me like they're doing a full engine. So I think you're right, Blake, when you say, look, Ford are getting very, very, you know, heavily invested in EVs. So maybe they're coming in to do electrics, and then, you know, Red Bull powertrains will be doing the internal combustion side of things. But I've been trying to figure out what does this mean for, you know, Honda, Red Bull powertrains, and Ford. And I've kind of come up with like three different scenarios, right? So scenario number one is that right now Red Bull powertrains they've taken over the Honda IP because Honda said, we're going to leave F1. That means Red Bull powertrains own the current design. Are they bringing that to Ford? Is that why Ford?
I'm not sure about that.
I know what you're saying. Give me 1 second to go.
Okay, go on.
And we'll talk about it. So will they bring this over to Ford? And is that also why Porsche were so interested? Because all of a sudden, Red Bull powertrain owned the best IP for an engine on the grid. That's a pretty good starting point, right? If this is the case, that means that Honda will be the ones to start all over with an engine design for 2026. That's one scenario. The second scenario is that Ford are the ones who are going to start all over with an engine design for 2026. That would mean that Red Bull powertrains would be working on the Honda engine until 2026, and then Honda would take back the IP and then sell that to other teams on the grid. Right, so that means that Red Bull would be investing in an engine they won't be using. And that also means that the engineers from Red Bull powertrains can't work on the Ford engine before 2026. That's a weird deal to me because they have this big facility. They have a lot of engineers they've poached from Honda, Mercedes, some from Ferrari, that kind of stuff, who cannot work on the engine they're going to be using for the new regulations in 2026. And then we have the third scenario, which is just like all out chaos, which is Red Bull powertrain says Honda can't use their IP. Honda says Red Bull powertrains can't use their IP, and nobody knows what's up and down. And then we all go to court and figure it out. And I know, you heard something about this, and I'm very interested.
So my understanding of this is that Red Bull do not own any Honda IP with this power unit. It is still manufactured in, and all the reliability updates are still all done in Sakura in Japan. However, that facility has been de-scoped significantly since Honda decided not to leave F1. So Honda did the E10 fuel upgrade to the internal combustion engine. That was all done in Japan, designed in Japan. As far as I'm aware, no work on that current Honda power unit is being done in Milton Keynes. And that, not only, firstly, like, because it's Honda IP, but secondly, Red Bull for 2026 will count through Red Bull powertrains Ford as a new manufacturer. So they're essentially saying to the FIA, this is our first go at designing everything. And the FIA say, okay, therefore you are entitled to more dyno testing, more things like this. I can't remember the exact rules for a new team.
That's what they're saying, but this is Red Bull, remember.
Nah, but the thing is, I think there are, I can't see Honda sacrificing any of the IP because there are things within that internal combustion engine that Honda have, including a very good patent. I can never remember the name of it because I keep thinking it's called Kamurocho plating, but it's not, because Kamurocho is the lead city in the Yakuza video games. It's not that, but there's a lot of technology that Honda own.
But to turn that on its head, I cannot see Red Bull going into a powertrain deal with a brand new facility, you know, all the testing equipment, the hiring, the design, all this kind of stuff, without actually owning that IP. I don't see how anyone we can make fun of Christian Horner for being, you know, a shit sir on social media and whatever, but he's not a bad manager and a bad, you know, he's good at the business side of things, right? I don't think he would allow that kind of deal to go through because that's a massive investment in something that essentially a year after they make this huge investment and they have to start using it, just kind of falls apart and then they have to start over again. That just makes sense to me. And Azeev Bryson has his hands on, I'm really interested in hearing Bryson's take on all of this.
I'll try to be brief here. I think we're kind of underappreciating the scale of the architectural differences from the pre-2026 engines to the 2026 engines. Not only are we getting nearly a 3x increase in the hybrid power of these engines, but something fundamental like, can we have split turbos anymore? It's changing. We're no longer able to have split turbos, right? So you think of that fundamental architectural piece of the Mercedes engine that made it incredibly powerful early on, that, you know, it took a while for Honda to figure out and they brought their split turbo technology. That's not even going to be a thing in 2026. So all I'm saying is, even if you want to start from the perspective of Red Bull having this Honda IP somehow because they're using Honda engines, I think we're overestimating how much carryover we're actually going to have in a new engine regulation where we don't have any MGUH, we have significantly more MGUK power, and we're fundamentally changing the architecture of the engine. I think there's a lot more work that Red Bull has to do to get where they need to be to compete with the likes of Mercedes, you know, Ferrari, and even Alpine, potentially.
Completely agree with you there. I'm glad you backed me up. Glad I'm not... Yeppe's here, just causing trouble, just throwing things out of there. And me and you are firefighting. We're firefighting. Thank you very much, Bryson. Rory, you've waited a very long time, and I'm so sorry for making you wait. How are you, my friend?
I actually have to go, guys, so he can happily take my space.
Bryson, thank you so much for joining.
All right, see ya.
Yeah, hi everyone. Oh, I was okay. I was currently eating a pizza, so I'm okay. I couldn't talk, so it's not pineapple, so it's okay. But I have a few pointers on the Red Bull launch, the Honda, and I think, well, it's not about the Red Bull launch. I was listening to the great stream of Toni Collin Brown, and she was saying, because she was at the event, and she was saying that Red Bull, it was mostly basically Red Bull America and Red Bull Racing were basically put together to make a launch event in New York, and it was, you could see on the day that some things weren't going to plan like that. So Red Bull America wanted to show their athletes in the winter extreme sports. Red Bull wanted to show off their car and like that. But I thought it was very, watching it, I was very bored and fell asleep at one point. But I think with the Red Bull, you could see in the Sky, if everyone hasn't seen the Sky interview with Craig Slater and Max Verstappen, you saw how Max kept bringing Honda back into when he wanted to, Craig just wanted to ask about Ford all the time. Max says, no, we're working with Honda at the moment. This is the focus. And then Ford is coming in. I think Tony says, well, the reason why there wasn't a separate event to Ford is because of the leaks the day before, and they couldn't, why have a separate event when just being leaked, everyone knows about it. Secondly, about the Honda deal is, I think as well, when Honda comes into 2026, because they're signed up for the 2026 regulations, and we've mentioned, Jeppe has mentioned, Bryson mentioned, and that because in Sakura, Honda have started descaling, they scaled back all their operations, only kept an eye on the 2026 engines. There's rumors that they were on the dynos and they were looking over doing reliability upgrades and E10 fuel for Red Bull. But you think when Red Bull took over, a lot of the Honda staff in the UK move over to Red Bull powertrains, and Red Bull, I think, leased or bought the facility that Honda was using in Liverpool.
Correct.
So if we think about this, and Honda's coming back in 2026 as an engine provider, they won't have a facility in the UK. Is that not correct? Like, is that not wrong? Because they're...
Correct,
so
yeah.
So they're going to have to build up a facility in the UK unless they want to buy it back off Red Bull, and they're just going to have their plant in Sakura. So that's the problem that Honda have now, because they said they're leaving, but they're still in the sport, and they don't have any facilities in Europe anymore. Like, Red Bull has the facility in England, Mercedes has Brixworth, Alpine has the French factories, which is going to be known as Alpine Engines, and they have Ferrari have Maranello words in house all the time. But yeah, I think Honda just have shot themselves in the foot. It's not like they didn't think. I know it was a different CEO at the time that made the decision, and a new CEO wants to come back in. But it's going to be interesting about Honda. And finally, about the Alfa Romeo launch, I think after you were saying about it gave you Top Gear vibes. If anyone knows the Jeremy Kyle show, the former Jeremy Kyle show in the UK, I go research it. You'll know what I'm talking about, and that's what I got from it. So thanks everyone.
Brilliant. You made a lot of good points. I really want to pick up on this Honda 2026 thing. They've really shot themselves in the foot, haven't they? And Blake, I want to just get your input on this, actually, and what you think. Just a bit of harmless speculation as to what they could do. But Honda, let's just remind everyone, they come into F1 in 2015. They've clearly rushed a power unit together. They're back of the grid with McLaren. It's awful. They then somehow salvage it and catch up to the likes of Mercedes, Ferrari, at which point they have a board decision to pull out of Formula One, which we believe went down to a final vote, and it was up to the CEO effectively to say we're leaving F1. And now they're winning races. They're constantly winning races. And that decision, which spurned Red Bull to create Red Bull Powertrains and this relationship with Ford, means that if they want to return in 2026, they can't partner with Red Bull. They can't take over AlphaTauri because, as Christian Horner said, in New York, they're committed to having AlphaTauri there as a customer team, this Red Bull powertrain Ford unit. They've shot themselves in the foot. They don't really have many options, do they?
I'll say this, and I'll be the first one to say that I don't know very well what's going on, as nobody does unless they're inside. So it sounds like, on one hand, Honda have had a top-level management chain over the last couple of years, so they decide to leave F1. And then they're like, you know what? Maybe we'll throw in a bid. And I mean, they're on the bill for 2026 engine manufacturers. So if indeed Red Bull do have AlphaTauri still, and they will keep that with the Red Bull powertrains Ford deal, what other options are there? Like, it's a weird one. It's a super weird one, because I don't feel like there's that many teams. And the only teams that we have potentially want to bring in another manufacturer. But I don't think we're going to get another engine manufacturer. It'll be a rebadging exercise, if anything. But I'm really not sure what to think about it. Potentially, I think I get the impression that most of the Honda stuff, be it facilities in the UK, IP and everything else, is just leased. It's not owned, or I could be completely wrong.
Right, yeah.
I will say Honda shot themselves in the foot. They've been gone through a shakeup, and they're like, we will stay, but with who?
I do wonder. I mean, if you just go through the teams, right, I think there's three candidates for them. One is Williams, which means they probably don't have to produce a power unit. They may have to either take the team over or part own the team and fund better facilities so they can catch up and not be at the back. I think it would be quite difficult for them to go from, competing for championships with Red Bull with being towards the back of the grid. There's Aston Martin. If Aston Martin want to compete, they may not want to be a customer team going forward. They're building up facilities there. Could that be an Aston Martin Honda? But there is a third team, Blake. How does McLaren Honda version 3 sound to you?
A GP2 engine, question mark?
Oh, God, it just makes me wonder.
I don't know. But like the whole thing, like Williams, on one hand, it's like, it really seems like Mercedes is trying to build up a second team with that, considering the leadership change and everything like that. That's not tinfoil hat. Like, that just makes sense. It's like you've got a relationship with that team principal and everything else. You supply their engines. It's the closest thing to, you've got Alfa Romeo and Ferrari. That's a fairly close partnership, as close as they can be anymore by rules, but I don't know. Yeah, maybe we might see McLaren going back. Works Honda. But the new power units are also less power, more electrical batteries. So there will be a huge emphasis on the high voltage and, MGUK system. So
isn't
maybe
it's 100% sustainable fuel as well. E10.
Yeah. Are they staying with that, or are they going to the synthetic?
Oh, it's going to be this new synthetic. Oh, there is actually a brilliant podcast to listen to with, who's the guy at Form? Is it Pat Simmons? And he talks about the development of this synthetic fuel. And yeah, this is a pretty big deal, actually. It's not really been used before. They're actually basically making it for 2026. But he even addresses things like greenwashing claims and how this is actually a proper sustainable fuel and not just one that people say, oh, you know, we got some leftover sugar cane and we turned it into a fuel. But yeah, anyway, sorry, a slight tangent there for myself. But yeah, as you say, could it be McLaren? I do wonder if McLaren just want to not be a customer team, do they have to go there? Yepe, were you trying to jump in on my Honda McLaren suggestion?
That's a tough one. That is really a tough one because I kind of want to see it happen, but I'm not sure McLaren wants to see that happen. I mean, we don't have to go that far back to remember how it went last time. But of course, yeah, I mean, again, Honda has to have a factory team. They have to. It used to be Red Bull. Now Red Bull is going to be Ford. I mean, McLaren is the obvious choice. They have the connections there, but it's going to be a hard sell given what happened last time. Honestly, I kind of think that Williams is probably a better bet because, you know, if we talk about Williams are still, they still need some partners. We saw when they launched their livery that, you know, they got Golf on board, but it wasn't nearly as big of a partnership as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be, the team was going to be named Golf Williams, and we were going to have a big Golf logo on the middle of the car, you know, on the side pod, but we didn't. That space is still empty. So they're looking for support. They're looking for someone to pay the bills. They're looking for someone to bring them back to the winning ways. Honda will want to find someone where they can have more influence than they had at Red Bull. And I think that's an obvious choice. I think that's probably where they want to go.
I'm inclined to agree. Right, I've just looked at the time and I realized, God, it's 10 to 9. Maybe it's my age showing, but I think I need another cup of tea. I did say we were going to run for just over an hour, so I just want to move on very quickly. Ash, you've been a bit quiet recently. It's my fault for not pulling you in. I want to talk about GM. I want to talk about Andretti. As a European, I must admit, I don't think I quite get the hype around Andretti. I know it's a big name. I know it's, you know, Andretti racing heritage all throughout the US and the IndyCar team. I think some of this has probably been because it's kind of come in the middle of this FIA trying to push for Andretti and FOM perhaps not being as keen. But, you know, what are your thoughts on them as an entry? And, you know, how much of a big deal is it at the GM once again, bold?
Man, I wish I could do the bald eagle sound with my mouth, the whole screech. Kind of how Logan Sargeon recently has his picture in front of the American flag with the Statue of Liberty and the bald eagle. I really appreciate
it. Yep, I saw that.
Yeah. Really leaning into the stereotype here. What the heck is a kilometer? No, on a more serious note, yeah, Andretti has been huge in the United States because I think, I mean, exactly what you mentioned is IndyCar history and then Cadillac with everything they've been doing in IMSA, et cetera. And people are just familiar with the name. They've just heard it enough where it just becomes brand familiarity. Like, I still don't know what Lockheed Martin does. I mean, I do. I'm just kidding. It's a weapons manufacturer. But they're in, like, hockey. They're in the NHL. They're in the MLB. They, like, advertise all the time. So have brand recognition at some point. And Andretti has done that so well in the United States. I mean, there's, like, an Andretti arcade or something by my parents' place in BFE, Florida. So people know who Andretti is. And I think he's really banking on that name recognition here in the United States. And he's a winner, and we love winners. So that's only going to get bigger. I think I saw a great post that mentioned the way that Red Bull and Ford have kind of done their announcement is that they've let F1 know. They informed them through the proper channels. Everyone was happy with the deal, blah, 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 blah. But the way Andretti and Cadillac did it is they kind of just like sprung it on social media and then kind of took F1 and teams aback. And they're like, whoa, you guys didn't say anything. You guys didn't mention it. You didn't go through, you know, whatever paperwork or you didn't text everyone beforehand and get the thumbs up emoji approval. So I think they were maybe a little brash in their entrance and a little audacious, but you know, you got to respect it. I guess you can just be like, we're Americans kicking down the door. But I highly think that they, one, they are able to go in. They have the money, they have the capital. Zach Brown said a couple years ago that the $250 million was to make sure teams can enter. And then this year he was quoted saying how, you know, maybe it should be more for teams to enter, which is ridiculous because Andretti clearly and Cadillac clearly had the money to do the $250 million front. I'm fine with more teams. I think Andretti and Cadillac, again, with their recognition in motorsports and their heritage in motorsports, do an incredible job. I think F1's just kind of taken back by how they announced it or how they're trying to steamroll their way in. But yeah, it's really the name recognition, brand recognition, the winnings they've done at Andretti and Cadillac separately, and then coming together, they're kind of just big names in the U.S. So I'm kind of excited for it. I don't know if it's going to bring a lot of American fans, but a lot of American motorsport fans will see that and be like, yes, cool, I appreciate that. But I'm pretty sure American motorsport fans are already watching Formula One because we just like motor, we just like things with cars and them on tracks. So we were really trying to bring in the fans who don't watch as regularly, which I think Andretti can do, especially they put F1 up on their arcades when people come in at 7 in the morning to do a little bit of go-karting.
God, I would absolutely love another team on the grid. Yeppe, I've realized I made you co-host, which means I can't see when you raise your hand for you to try to jump in. But I've got a question for you, and it's about Andretti. Do we? So we know that Mohamed Ben Sulayem, oh, I butchered that pronunciation. I'm really sorry. That's MBS. Must be seen, as I've heard some people refer to him as. So we know that he's been quite vocal about getting another team on the grid. He tweeted about how the FIA was going to open up this process to have more teams. And we know there's been some pushback from the teams and from themselves. They're saying, hold on, this $200 million anti-dilution fund amount actually only covers us for a couple of years of, you know, lower revenue. If we want to increase that amount of money, you know, double it, possibly more. Do we think MBS stepping back is going to affect Andretti's chances of getting onto the grid? And I know we'll talk a little bit more about the FIA informed politics, but just in terms of Andretti's chances of getting on the grid, do you think that changes as a result of this?
Yes. That's a very short answer. So I can say a lot of things about MBS, and I'm probably going to, but one of the only good things he did was to announce publicly that we're looking for new teams, because this means that all the speculation and all the backroom chatter about Andretti that had been up to that point all of a sudden got pushed out into the public. It's now a public process where the FIA has said, give us your application and we'll look it over. So the teams and the FIA and FOM and whoever else has a stake in this can no longer shut the door quietly on Andretti, because you know it's been made public. So they have to take a public stance. And when they have to take a public stance, they also have to justify their decision. So that means if they say to Andretti, no, we don't want you on the grid, they have to say, why don't you want Andretti on the grid? Before, they could kind of just, you know, make the entire process go away by not talking about it. So he kind of just kicked the door in and said, let's go, let's see what happens here. And I think that's very good for Andretti because, again, I don't think the reason Andretti isn't that hot on, the teams and FIA's list to get on the grid, I don't think it has anything to do with the money. Because, like Ash said, this is GM. They have the money to pay to get on the grid if they wanted to. And even if it was double, they would still have the money. What I've heard is that Andretti has not played the usual paddock politics of schmoozing up to the stakeholders within the FIA and F1 in the same way that everyone else has done to get on the grid and playing that same game. He's just kind of kicked in the door and said, look, we want to be here. We're an American team. We're going to do this the American way. That's loud. That's fast. Deal with it. And that's kind of what's, you know, been the creating the opposition from the FIA to just let them on the grid. Something else I've heard is that the reason there was some resistance is that there was a second North American bid from an experienced motorsports entity, whatever that means. I'm assuming that means it's someone who's already run or does run a racing team in a different series, who, if Liberty could secure one more North American race, which they did in Miami and then another one in Vegas, they were prepared to also make a deal or make a bid to get on the grid. We just haven't heard anything about this. So there could be some competition there as well. But mostly, I think it's just about the fact that Andretti came in loud and proud instead of playing the usual politics to try and get on the grid.
Right. So basically, they turned up to a meeting and they were playing Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen, just a little bit too loud, right?
USA.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Blake, more teams. I want more teams for a very simple reason. You put two more drivers on the grid, or you put four more drivers, ideally. That's more storylines. That's more variables. That's more overtake to talk about. That's more, you know, storylines throughout a Grand Prix throughout a season. It's a more opportunity for drivers that are currently stuck on the sidelines to get a seat. Is there a downside to expanding the grid?
It depends on how much money you want in your pocket if you're at the top of the food chain. And I think that's pretty much what we're talking about. Why people don't want teams on, it's going to hurt their bottom line. But in the cost cap era, is that really a problem? I want to see more teams. I want to see more drivers. Do we have enough stories? Yes. Can there be more? Yes. What's too many? You know, four more cars on the grid is not too many. I'm looking at the chat right now. There are too many races. And so if you reduce races and increase teams, that's costing somebody money. Every race is an opportunity for them to get loads of cash. So it's as much as we like to think of this as a sport. It is a sport, but it's also a really expensive marketing exercise. And the goal of that is for people to make money. As cynical as that is what it is.
So, yeah, that is cynical, but you are right. And I think it's also worth keeping in mind that I think for a lot of the teams on the grid, there must be just a natural sense of entitlement, given that, you know, Formula One is booming now. In the early hybrid era, viewing figures were crashing down. Circuits were not selling out of tickets. You know, the DTS factor, the social media figures were nowhere near as good. You could not have dreamed of, you know, this interest in circuits in North America and, you know, the Middle East. They stuck with the sport during that era. And you know what? I completely understand why they might be looking at this $200 million dilution fund saying, double it. Because they've gone through all those lean years where the sport was really struggling. You go back and look at the cars in 2015, there were hardly any sponsor logos on the mid-grid and back. So, it is how it is, isn't it? It's one big game of politics. Right, we're running out of time. And there are a few more things I want to talk about. I can see Katharina has also requested speaker rights, so I will try to get you in. I'm just going to try and get through these final few agenda points before I do. Right, we need to talk FIA drama. Yepe, MBS. He has, as of today, he's handed over his kind of day-to-day reins to Nicholas Tombazis, who, we should just clarify, this was actually always kind of part of the plan. He'd been promoted to this role of head of FIA single-seaters. It is just that for the last year, Mohammed's basically been there constantly. He's been very vocal. He's done interviews. There has been a lot of controversy that's kind of followed. You know, it started with him kind of doing a report into kind of Abu Dhabi 21. But then it started to, you know, I remember he did an interview a while back where he was saying, you know, I don't have to force my opinions on people, but, you know, Lewis talks about LGBT rights or Black Lives Matter, and Lando Norris talks about mental health. We shouldn't be forcing these opinions on people. We've just spoken about his approach with Andretti and just how vocal he's been. And this all really seemed to kick off last week or 2 weeks ago now, where he commented on a rumoured Saudi Arabian bid, which was only a rumour that they'd tried to purchase Formula One for $20 billion from Liberty. We know from multiple media sources, and Andrew Benson specifically did a really great piece on this, that the teams, first of all, the teams are not happy with him, but the FOM, so Liberty Media themselves, had issued their lawyer had kind of contacted him to say, you know, this is unacceptable. Right. What do you make of all this that's been going on between them? And in your opinion, how difficult is the role of the FIA president? Because essentially, Liberty are just trying to get as much money out of the sport as possible. They are a business. That's not what his job as head of the FIA is to do, though, is it?
No, it's absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, to answer the question, how difficult is it to be the FIA president? That depends entirely on whoever is president. because it is a highly political position. It's an elected position, right? So it's not like a job that can be taken away. It's not what you interview for. It's you have all the ASNs, so the member organizations of the FIA vote for whoever they think should be president. Which is why it surprises me how bad he is at the politics of it. He is making life, you know, extremely hard for himself because he opens up this conflict with F1. I don't think I've been on Twitter since the end of last season once without seeing his name or the FIA as one of the trending hashtags, which that tells you something. And he's only in the first year of his presidency, right? He's still just kicking up these fights all over the place. And you know, Blake touched on this, and he's don't mess with the money. And one of the first things he did was saying, well, we've heard that there is this bid to maybe buy F1 for, I think was it 20 billion or something. I can't remember the name or the number. And then he says, that's too much money. And then the teams are up in arms. And of course they are, because now he's messing with their money. If F1 gets sold, the team stands to make a substantial amount of money off that sale. So don't mess with the money. That's going to cost you dearly, especially if you're in, you know, an elected position. Now we just found out today through a leak and then an announcement, I think, that he's going to be hands off F1. And I think that's him realizing that he cannot, you know, put up that much of a fight against F1. We can't forget how powerful F1 is within the world of motorsports, because F1 is the big, you know, income generator for all the local associations, for the tracks, for the, you know, organizers, everything. And if the money starts drying up because F1 wants to do this and have this conflict, it doesn't really matter how much support he has within the FIA. They're going to vote differently because they need those funds to keep coming in. And yeah, I don't think this is a fight he can win. So now he's pulling back. He's saying, I'm going to be hands off F1, because he knows that's going to buy him some breathing room and avoid him getting ousted. So he can focus on, you know, rebuilding some support and seeing out the rest of this 4-year term, and then maybe trying to run again once we hit, you know, the next general election for an FIA president in 3 years' time. So it's there's a lot of drama, and I think it's the right move for him if he wants to keep his presidency, is just to back off F1 and just say, yeah, this is not a fight I'm going to win.
The moment I realized there was tension was when it was at the end of season award ceremony, where I think Christian Horner jokingly was like, oh, you know, we had a bit of fun in Suzuka when no one knew if Max was champion or whatever, and MBS just like grabbed the mic and just went on a rant for like, it was literally like 90 seconds. And he was talking about like, I can't remember we will share the clip from the subreddit account later on, but it wasn't like along the lines of, well, this is what the teams voted for. It's not controversial. We were just applying what the teams did it.
Without absolutely cringing.
It's one of the worst things. What makes it so funny? It's Stefano Domenicali is constantly trying to shut him up. It looks like he's trying to like push him out and tell him to stop. And he just keeps going on. And that was the moment I realized this is not going to work. Right. Before I bring in Katharina and Jacopo and then we round up, Ash, can I just ask very quickly? Because I know you are a content creator. Do you care for the politics of Formula One? Like, is that interesting to you? Because to me, it's one of those things where I hate it, but I secretly love it. It's like a dirty TV show. It's like Keeping Up with the Kardashians. I should hate it, but when it kicks off, I'm obsessed.
I live in Washington, D.C., so definitely love the inner politics of everything. I love it. I love everything about motorsports in general, whether it's the politics. It can be how the marketing works. It could be how the cars are built, the engineering behind it, the aerodynamics. I think that's why I like motorsports so much. There's a little bit something for everyone. And that's why I tell people to also watch NASCAR. Sorry, I know we're Formula One, but because it's so dramatic and the personalities are so big, it's just like it's like little politics there. And if anyone watched The Clash, you know there's now some beef between Kyle Busch, Austin Dillon, and Bubba Wallace from that almost second half of it. It's just, I just love the politics and everything behind it. So short answer, yes.
Great stuff. Right, I'm going to try and add a speaker. Right, Katharina, I've just given you speaker rights. I'm hoping that's going to work for you. After this, we are going to round up. So if you want to unmute yourself, and if you've got any comments or you've got a question for our panel, please go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Hi, guys. Just first of all, Blake, I really appreciated the joke about the GP2 engine and just want to throw it out there. Maybe Aston Martin would be the best choice for the Honda engine just to mess with Alonso because he'll still be here in 10 years. I would just really love that.
Oh, my God.
It's my first idea. Back for him. But what I was trying to get at, because you were talking lots of politics and stuff and circling a bit back to the whole Ford thing and the whole Domenicali no-show mix-up fiasco thing, and I was watching the same stream Rory mentioned earlier from Tony Cohn Brown yesterday, and she was talking about how what was he doing there in the first place? Like, what is Stefano Domenicali doing at a Red Bull event? I mean, he was there for the Audi launch, obviously, but that was a whole different thing. So what's your feeling about that? Like, there was a whole mess up as well in the end because he didn't show, but he was there, he was planned, he was announced, and poof. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it was a bit weird. I did hear that what happened was, because the event got delayed by a few minutes, that he was supposed to come up and perhaps talk about Ford. But then perhaps because there was also a Honda logo on the car, they decided at last minute not to perhaps talk about Ford whilst he was there. And then secondly, I don't know if you saw, but shortly after he was supposed to, they called him up to the Red Bull stage and that fiasco happened. He was actually on Fox and Friends and they completely butchered the pronunciation of his name. It was absolutely incredible. They brought him on stage and they were like, so you're Stefano Domenicali. Who are you? And he was like, I'm the CEO of Formula One. Thank you. Yeah, it was a bit awkward. Yeah, it is a bit strange. Yeppe, do you think there was any... When I saw that he was talking about Ford, a part of me was like, oh, it's interesting that he's talking about Ford and he's been very quiet on this Andretti GM kind of deal. I guess he would have to be because they're not an official team yet. But I don't know, perhaps I'm reading too much into that. He was really talking about Ford, but that Bond has generally been really quiet about Andretti and GM.
As the CEO, he has to stay quiet about this kind of stuff because that's a fast track to being ousted as the CEO if he starts playing teams like that. But in terms of him being there at launch, I'm one of the people who think that it kind of makes sense because Red Bull are bringing in Ford. That's major news. That is, I don't understand how it kind of went under the radar because of that one tweet an hour before the launch that was so anticlimactic. But I honestly think that the CEO of Formula One should be there if someone brings in Ford or GM or, I don't know, like Toyota or Porsche or something like that. I think it makes sense. And then we can talk about, okay, he was there at the launch for one specific team. There's been some controversy around in the previous seasons, but I still think from a communication standpoint, it makes sense, right? You want to communicate that this is not just one team bringing in one engine manufacturer. This is the sport supporting new manufacturers coming in. From that side, it makes sense. And then, of course, they bungled the entire presentation and interview and everything. That's an entirely different discussion, but I think it makes sense that he was there.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Katharina, thank you very much for your question. Finally, as we wrap up, we're going to go to Jacopo. Thank you so much for joining. You're one of my favourite Italians. I hope we can hear you clearly. Unmute yourself.
Hi, sorry. As a proper Italian, I was in the middle of cooking something, so sorry about that. Hi, everyone. First of all, lovely to hear you all. I have a question regarding F1 politics, something that we haven't touched on yet. So the thing I refer to as the political gag article that has been introduced by the FIA into this year's sporting regulations. And I find it interesting that at every single car launch we had so far, all the drivers have been asked about their opinion about it. They've been not too vocal about their pushback against this, but no one has has professed themselves to be pro the, this article, of course. And the interesting development that we had lately is that also Stefano Domenicali pushed against this, said that he's not going to put a gag, literally, on any driver's mouth. So my question to the panelists will be, do you think this article is going to be short-lived? Like, are we going to see it removed from the regulations even before the season takes off? Is there going to be pushback from the FIA, and is it going to stay, you reckon? And if it's going to stay, who do you reckon is going to be the first driver to, let's say, break the rules in that turn?
Okay, great question. And I should have actually mentioned that earlier when I was talking about perhaps some of the things people weren't happy with. Ash, I know you've been quite vocal about these things in the past, rightfully so, of course. So, yeah, the FIA have introduced a slight bit of wording that says that they can't have any, drivers can't show any kind of political or social messages unless it's been approved by the FIA, whatever that approval looks like. They claim it's to essentially match up with the Olympic Charter. That said, I don't think that's actually true, because the way the Olympics work is slightly different. It's not actually like for like. But anyway, all the drivers have kind of said, when they spoke about it, they don't really think it's necessary. I saw a lot of people shocked that Helmut Marko from Red Bull was saying the same thing. It was like that meme of, you know, when someone you don't like makes a great point and you agree with it. what do you think about this ruling from the FIA, and do you think it's going to work, you know? Or do you think drivers will just continue doing what they're doing and perhaps risk a slap on the wrist?
Just to reiterate, just to clarify, we're asking about the FIA statement against drivers speaking up and speaking their opinions. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, great. That's a load of horse shit. Excuse my language. I think it's ridiculous. I'm just upset by it. It's just a little bit frustrating. I mean, Americans would be like, freedom of speech, but that's not how it works in the FIA. First Amendment. How dare you? It's absurd, because I think there are a lot of issues brought to light and challenging the FIA's archaic policies by speaking up, and drivers get to rally their fan bases when they get on media, and then during the race they get all that attention and they're able to rally for good causes and they're able to speak up and against systemic issues and issues around the world and really bring to light, because it's so important to them, and it kind of shows their personalities a little bit if they do want to speak to it, what's important to them. I appreciate it. So it's a little ridiculous that they said that, and I'm pretty sure a lot of folks, or a lot of drivers, excuse me, are just not going to listen to it and pay whatever fine or just deal with the consequences.
I agree. That's certainly what I'm expecting. Blake, do you want to jump in? And then we're going to do a wrap-up, which will be our predictions for next week, where we've got a few more car reveals.
Ooh. Well, I think to further Ash's point, some people, like, they just want to see people drive, but that's not what we've got. We've got humans on a racetrack, and they have thoughts, feelings, families, and causes that are dear to them. But at the same time, all of these so-called political statements, again, going back to my other point, they mess with the money. And when you mess with the money, somebody gets mad. A lot of these political statements are up against the countries that are racing, or issues that are in the countries they're racing in. Or, you know, there was the thing with Sebastian last year in Canada. All these things mess with the money, and they're trying to make the sport isolated to not have to deal with those things. But we're dealing with humans that aren't massive corporations. So, and we have values of our own. And to try and get them to be quiet about that is absurd.
It's strange, isn't it? I remember a few years ago, when, again, this is when F1 wasn't doing particularly well, about 2014, 2015, not many sponsors coming in, and they were talking about the 2017 cars and how they're going to be much faster and more exciting. And they kept talking about how the drivers need to be the heroes. They need to be the stars of the show. They can't be robots. And it's interesting how, as soon as that started to be the case, they perhaps want to take it
that hero. Be the hero, but not that hero, please.
Yeah, it's less like we want to see you maybe pull off a good overtake, but that's it. You don't say anything. Don't say anything. Just be good. Just be very good. There's definitely a joke to be had about potential gag order and how MBS wants to implement it when I think Max Moseley possibly would have been a fan of that, but maybe that's not appropriate. UFO knows what I'm talking about. Right. Let's move on. Let's not talk about Max Moseley and his interest that led to him losing his role in the FIA. We're going to talk about next week. So we've got a few more car launches. I don't actually have the exact dates to hand, but we have a number of teams showing off their cars. Aston Martin have promised that they will show their actual car. I believe it's going to hit the track at Silverstone. Same for Mercedes on the 15th. We're going to see Ferrari. Oh, the highlight of my year is when the new Ferrari gets shown. I think AlphaTauri also doing their launch. Let's just go one by one through the panel, starting with Yeppe and Ashton Blake. One thing you're looking forward to seeing next week. Yeppe?
Wait, okay, so is it one thing I'm looking forward to I think is going to happen, or one thing I hope is going to happen?
You speak with your heart, Yeppe.
Okay, I'm going to do both. One thing I think is going to happen is that everyone's going to reveal liveries that are very much like they were last year. What I hope is going to happen is that at least one team really surprises me and goes, you know, all out, goes crazy. Give me chrome, give me gold, give me pink, give me, well, maybe not LEDs. Don't give me LEDs. I hate LEDs on cars, but give me some color. Give me something crazy. I want to see something crazy.
Ash?
Yeppe just wants to see something so gauche that it's actually very trendy. I'm excited for the... No, I was going to say McLaren, but I just know they're going to be a different shade of papaya. So that's not going to change. They'll change like one number on the hex code and call it a day. I think Merck and Ferrari, just to see what they've done different, especially Merck being and Ferrari being so close to Red Bull in the championship last year, just be very interested to see how they change the car or see how they go through testing with their new builds.
And finally, Blake. If he's still there. He disappeared, Blake. Or maybe he's gone off to open one of those.
No, here I am. Here I am. Sorry.
Oh, there you are.
So I've got one statement or demand. I've got one statement and demand. Show me the side pods or the lack thereof. Show them to me soon.
Oh, you mean the advantage that's been locked in for years?
Indefinitely, I think. Yeah, years, probably.
Oh, that's a very good reference.
No, but to be fair, I've actually spent quite a bit of time speaking with a former aerodynamicist today about that, going into detail. So I'm working on a video about that topic. But you know, we take the piss about that. Like that's an advantage locked in for years. It might not have been last year, but it very well could be in the long term, and something that's going to take them. You know, they've. Details about that later, but I'm really looking forward to seeing the Mercedes. Will the car that they reveal be the car, you know, will it be indicative of what we're going to see in testing? Because they're not going to roll up with a B-spec in testing because there's only 3 days of testing. So
I very much look forward to seeing that video and disagreeing with it in the comments.
That's fine. You can do that, Guy, and then I'll ask you for your credentials.
I'm a senior software developer who knows more about Formula One than you do.
That's fine. No, there's you're not the only one. You're not the only one. But okay. Now I think as much as we take the joke about that statement and meme that I don't know, man. We could see. Let's see. I'm looking forward to seeing Mercedes car. Both I would love to see a black Mercedes, one, and two, I'd really like to see what their design philosophy is for this year.
Yeah, and you know what, actually, with the side pod thing, all last year showed us was the potential of the cars in year one. This is a four-year regulation cycle, and every car will have a theoretical different development ceiling. Mm-hmm. Just because a team is behind in 1 year does not mean they will be behind in year four. Just because a midfield team is 1 second a lap slower than a front runner in year one doesn't mean they'll be 1 second a lap slower in year four.
Certain teams will... in the menu of F1 Manager, right?
Yeah. absolutely. Just to wrap up, the thing I'm looking forward to seeing, I want to know. I know Blake's mentioned the kind of Mercedes side pods. I want to talk about Ferrari. I want to know if they're almost going to introduce their... Last year, they'll have those kind of... They look like pasta shells, their side pods. I don't know. I can't remember what the actual name of them was that people seem to give them, but then we saw Red Bull kind of go with this really aggressive kind of downward cut. And I want to see if Ferrari kind of perhaps take a hybrid approach there. Yeah, let's wait and see. Right, we have overrun, ladies and gentlemen. I said we'll be just over an hour. We've taken 80 minutes. Thank you very much for joining. I'm going to give each of our guests one quick time to remind us where we can find them across their social media channels. Yeppe, shall we start with you?
Yes, you can find me in the comment section of all Ash and Breaks content where I disagree and play an armchair expert, or you can find me on Twitter, or I could ban you on Reddit. That's up to you. Those are the places you can find me.
Yes, please also visit the subreddit. There's so much great content on there. But yes, please do not go on Yeppe's bad side. Although he's very kind and he moderates very, very fairly. Ash, where can people find you?
Under mostly Twitch, but also just Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, whatever social media you have. Under Ash Vandalay, if you just like motorsports, NASCAR, IndyCar, MotoGP, unicycle racing, I'd love to talk about it and learn with you.
Oh, and you know what? If you're interested in doing some Formula E, this is the first ever Formula E race in St. Hyderabad in India this Saturday. So perhaps one day you can cover Formula E as well. I have a slight bias there because I used to work for them. So finally, Blake, where can people find you? And what about this? Where can people find this exciting new video you've got coming forward?
Right. So pretty much you can find on Twitch and Twitter and Instagram. It's just Break with three R's. So B-R-R-R-A-K-E. YouTube and TikTok, if you want my Formula One content, that will be Break F1. That YouTube video will be sometime next week, right before or right after Mercedes launched their car, depending on what they do. So we're looking forward to it. But yeah, that's where you can find me. I do also dabble in the video gaming arts quite a bit on Twitch, and Ash does as well, which is always a good time. Not only just the racing sims, but so every now and then we just like to kick back and be our normal nerdy selves and play some video games and discuss what we're passionate about at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you can't always talk about motorsports. You've got to be able to kick back and relax. Right. So thank you, everyone, for joining. Sorry for overrunning. Thank you to all our guests that joined in. I also want to give a shout out to Bryson, who joined. He's now rejoined after speaking earlier. He's got a great podcast. Bryson, feel free to kind of share it on Twitter and we'll give you a retweet. I think it's called the Tech Heads F1 podcast, but it's brilliant. If I've got that wrong, I've promoted a different podcast, then that one's also good as well. But I'm pretty sure it's Tech Heads and it's great. Right. Thank you everyone for joining. We'll try and redo this in a couple more weeks. As always, the subreddit is your home for excellent Formula One content. Whether that's to discuss news, whether that's just to ask a question, perhaps you're new to F1 and you just want to get involved in the daily discussion and you don't want to ask it on Twitter, feel free to join us over there. But until then, we'll see you all in a couple of weeks' time. Bye for now.